It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier today, in an address carried live here on 90.5 WESA, Pope Francis made an historic address to a joint session of Congress. He is the first pope ever to address Congress. Among other things, Pope Francis told his own story of being an immigrant. His family migrated from Italy to Argentina. The Pope mentioned this in the context of a broader message about the issue of immigration, and he reminded Congress that we were all once foreigners. He said to put yourself in the place of others, and he reminded Congress, and for that matter, the rest of us, of the Golden Rule. Do unto others as you will have them do unto you, and to view immigrants as people, not numbers. He spoke of the defense of life, an obvious reference to abortion, and advocated for the global abolition of the death penalty, which still exists in Pennsylvania. As expected, the Pope addressed the issue of global warming, which he, like President Obama, believes has been exacerbated by industry. A controversial message which led one Republican lawmaker to boycott the Pope's appearance on Capitol Hill today. The Pope referenced Martin Luther King and the 50th anniversary of the March to Selma and Thomas Merton. Is Pope Francis injecting politics into the role of the pontiff, and is it earning him more followers? I'm joined now in studio by Sister Rita Yasted, Dorothy Saladiak, Distinguished Professor of English at La Rose College. Sister Rita, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. It's nice to be here.
Also with us by phone is Darlene Weaver, Director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University. Darlene Weaver, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation by calling us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, ESSPGH@WESA.FM, and on Twitter at ESSPGH. What do you think of the Pope's address to Congress and his willingness to weigh in on political issues like global warming and immigration? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. We'd like to hear from both Catholics and non-Catholics and have you share your thoughts today. Sister Rita, what is your overall reaction to what the Pope said in his address to Congress today?
Well, it's the first one of the three that he gave that I actually had a chance to listen to, and I was impressed with a couple things. I think I was, first of all, impressed with the fact that it occurred at all, because it's an amazing phenomenon to have a pope from Rome come and speak to a Congress. It's never happened. We've had popes that have come to America, but they've never actually been invited or accepted an invitation to talk to Congress. Secondly, I thought of this this morning when I awoke, because this is a really interesting confluence of feasts. We're celebrating the High Holy Days for our Jewish brothers and sisters. It's also the Feast of Eid for our Arabic. Some of my Arabic students are celebrating today. This is a big holiday for them, the end of the fast. And then for Catholics, this was a big thing that the Pope was here. And it's also the Feast of Our Lady of Mercy. So a kind of a shout out to all the Mercy Sisters who have lived that, some of the message that he's actually spoken about today. So I think as I was watching it, I was thinking of the fact of what an amazing time we lived in, that we had a chance to listen to someone who spoke what I consider to be a very close, not political message, but a close to the gospel message. I think if you went back and checked against many of the things that he said, whether you agreed or disagreed, I think you would find them rooted in the gospel. It's very much a gospel message to me.
Darlene Weaver, how about you? I'm not sure how much of the Pope's address today that you were able to hear, but your thoughts about what you might have heard of what he said today and his stance on issues in general.
Well, I was able to watch the Pope's address. In fact, I was part of a large crowd of Duquesne faculty, students, and staff members who gathered to watch a live stream of the Pope's speech, and it was really exciting to be sharing that as a community, particularly since the religious sponsors of Duquesne University, the Spiritans, are a community who come together around a commitment to the poor and to the most vulnerable. So Pope Francis has a lot of fans over here at Duquesne. I was really struck by the genius of his decision to frame the speech around four American figures, because I thought that that decision, that choice of holding up Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, and Thomas Merton, was an attempt to strike some common ground, to point to some common moral commitments and virtues in a way that configured his speech not as an external sort of moral message, but as an invitation to dialogue that shares some common moral commitments with our American history and culture. So I thought that was really, really just deft on his part.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation. Let's bring a caller in right off the top here. We have Marcel from Pittsburgh on the line. Hello, Marcel. Welcome.
Hello. I was raised Catholic and got out of the church, but I think the Pope's speech is very important. I don't think it's political because, first off, it's humanitarian. It might be political to most Americans, but he comes from a humanitarian background.
So you feel that it was a humanitarian speech, not necessarily a political speech. Am I characterizing that correctly?
Yeah, I just think that he's coming from a humanitarian point of view, and there it becomes a political point of view for most Americans. But I think it's a humanitarian, first of all.
Well, that's an interesting observation, and it certainly seemed to be a conscientious speech on the Pope's part. The sense that I got was that he felt his reason for being there was to remind the members of Congress and others listening of their moral obligations. Sister Rita, you're nodding your head, so I'll let you.
Yeah, there was such a prophetic quality to him, and I think I've seen that as I said, I was very struck by the prophetic quality of what he was talking about, and I agree with our friend from Duquesne that she's absolutely right. The four people that he chose to use as a sort of frame for it was a brilliant move, because I was thinking to myself how different these people were. I mean, Dorothy Day has been a controversial figure in many ways, even among Catholics. Because of, when you look at her history, one of the reasons people say she should never be a Catholic saint is that she had an abortion as a young person. And it was part of her story. And the fact that he would bring her in as the woman of the four that he talked about this morning, I thought was very significant, because it, in a sense, not that he overlooked abortion, because obviously the speech was also about that, but he looked at someone who had an abortion and went on to do an amazing thing in her life of taking care of the poorest and setting up the Catholic Worker Movement, which to this day still does that. And I think that's probably, there were many times during the speech that I thought that what he said was almost metaphorical instead of direct, except for, he didn't name names. He didn't call anyone out. It was just, this is the message. And it was a prophetic message. And people, I think, could hear what they wanted. But I think if you listen closely, it was really a message that everyone, I think, has to really think about. To be against capital, I mean, it's been a long time since I've heard a priest talk about capital punishment from the altar. I mean, it's always about abortion. But the point is that's the whole idea of life from birth to death, to conception to death. And in a sense, I think he just called those of us who are progressive or conservative to look at the lot of the message that he's saying through maybe a different view. It was brilliant.
And I wondered if he wasn't, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I'm wondering if he wasn't calling out people who have been cited in other circles as being hypocrites when they speak out against abortion, but don't also speak out against capital punishment. A lot of what he seemed to be saying was he was speaking to forgiveness. He was speaking to the idea of rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. Darlene Weaver, what sense did you get on that level?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, I think the question of whether or not the Pope's speech was political, or is he injecting politics into the role of the pontiff, sort of rests on a false dichotomy between religion and politics. I mean, religious faith has political implications. Moral commitments have political implications. The whole point of being a disciple of Jesus Christ for Christians, is to enact that life of discipleship, right, in our relationship with God, with our fellow human beings, and with the natural environment. And so we misunderstand what religion is if we try to confine it or sequester it into some narrow space of personal moral sentiments and convictions and suggest that it has no implications for our common life. So I think it was quite natural for the Pope to speak about the importance of dialogue and to speak about a concern for the poor and to hold up the importance of human dignity and respect for human life. That certainly includes issues like abortion. It includes the death penalty, which he spoke about directly. But if you pay attention to the full scope of the speech, it also includes what he said about the environment. It includes what he said about economic systems. There are multiple threats to life, and abortion and capital punishment are only some of the tragic examples of the manifold ways in which human beings are capable of undermining conditions for dignified lives for our fellow human beings.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with Sister Rita Yasted, Dorothy Saladiak, Distinguished Professor of English at La Roche College, and also Darlene Weaver, Director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University. We have Taylor on the line from Greensburg. Taylor, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I appreciated Pope Francis talking about technology and how that needed to be at the service of the greater good. As a young Catholic, I am always interested in how to use all of these things around me to further the gospel in the world. And so I really appreciated that framework that he put into play there.
And Taylor, as well, President Obama yesterday welcomed Pope Francis as the first pontiff to share an encyclical through a Twitter account. So so that I think goes along with what you're saying. And stay on the line with us, Taylor. And I would throw out the question to all of you ladies: how much has the Pope or the Vatican's mastering of social media contributed to his being a successful communicator of ideas?
I would say that it has very much contributed. I always am kind of pummeled by all of these different social media interactions, and I'm always impressed. You know, whenever I see, it's kind of become a news source for me. And so whenever I get my news, a lot of it comes at me first from Facebook, from Twitter, from all these different places. And then I'm able to share them with my groups and friends across the different rounds of my life more easily. And it kind of spawns conversations that might not have happened. You know?
Well, it certainly sounds as though the Pope is, you know, social media is the way to reach younger people. Taylor, you're a young Catholic. It sounds like he has successfully reached you. Certainly, Rita, Sister Rita, and also Darlene, when you hear this, when you hear what someone like Taylor is saying here, this has to be certainly encouraging, I would think.
Yeah, it encourages me. I know that's certainly the way my students get their news at a college level. They live on their computers or their phones. The historical point for me, I mean, I'm old enough to remember John 23rd. And as I was watching Francis this morning, I thought to myself how different John 23rd might have been if he were living now and could have used some of the ways of communicating. Because in a sense, he had a profound effect on the church, but it wasn't the sort of thing that many people even knew existed, because these encyclicals would come out or whatever, and you would see him on television once, but it wasn't as if you could interact and he could interact with you. He didn't pick up the phone and call people. I mean, he was a very different personality, but I see them both as being very revolutionary in my lifetime as popes go. I mean, John 23rd didn't live long, but his effect with Vatican II certainly extended long. And I think it'd be interesting to see, if I live long enough, to see the effect of Francis It's already had a very great effect.
And Darlene, I'm sure you have a lot of students who are like Taylor, and I'm curious as to how this, how the millennial generation or younger generations like those of your the ages of your students are gravitating toward this Pope.
Well, he just has such terrific charisma and appeal, and I think that President Obama said something to this effect yesterday when he said that the moral credibility of the Pope really rests on his lived example. And so, yes, my students are technologically tuned in, and like many millennials, they're interested, intrigued, attracted, excited by Pope Francis in degrees that, frankly, we I hadn't observed among my students under Pope Benedict, for example. And I think that that appeal, while it's certainly aided and abetted by social media, it really what it has its roots in is his manifest humility, his concern for the poor, his simplicity and joy. I mean, he is a pope who just really walks the walk, and it is a beautiful and wonderful thing to be living in the time of Pope Francis and to be lifted up and encouraged and inspired by his example.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Claudia from Moon. Claudia, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, hello. I'm an immigrant from Argentina living in Pittsburgh for the last 22 years. I was in tears this morning listening to Pope Francis set a very different tone to what all that we are hearing on radio and TV against opening our hearts and our homes to the different foreigners. This morning he said, do not be afraid of foreigners because we have all been foreigners at one point. And I think at this time I would like to thank to all the people that who were not afraid of me or where I was coming from or the unknown and gave me a place in society. I also went to Duquesne University. And all the people who have been my employers and believed in me and what I could give to this society. And I think Pope Francis is just calling all of us to be the best we can be, to get from inside all the good that we have and not to be afraid of showing it into the world.
Well, Claudia, you have certainly, I guess in reverse, you've lived the Pope's story. He immigrated to Argentina. You immigrated from Argentina, but it sounds like that is helping you relate to the message that he was conveying today, certainly on Capitol Hill.
Definitely. My family and I were traveling to Philadelphia this weekend to be part of the mass that he's going to give on Sunday. We want to be part of this. We are so proud, and we feel very close to him and his message, and also Catholic, and knowing that all of his teachings have a lot to do with Jesus, and sometimes it might make people uncomfortable, but he is going back to Jesus' teachings, and that's what's important.
Claudia, thank you for joining us, and safe travels to Philadelphia. We hope you enjoy your chance to see the Pope, like many people from Pittsburgh are hoping to take advantage of or are in the process of doing. Thank you, Claudia. Let's go to Jeff from New Alexandria. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning. What I thought was very interesting, it was a very eye-opening speech, but what I found was so very interesting, being self-employed, people were calling me on the phone, and I didn't want to answer the phone. I wanted to listen to the Pope, meaning that I think it was the speech of the millennium, whether it's religious or political or humanitarian. I think this man of all men had something to say, and it'll be an interesting situation if anyone follows his discussions on all the issues that he had raised.
Well, Jeff, obviously it sounds as though that speech affected you a great deal.
Yes, sir, very much.
I would ask the question to our guest, how is the Pope's message of inclusiveness resonating with Catholics as well as non-Catholics? What sense are you getting not only from people within the Catholic religion, the Catholic faith, but also people who are not necessarily Catholics or even Christians, but who feel that this Pope is speaking to them connecting with them on a very visceral level?
Well, I know people who are not Catholic who certainly think this man is he's kind of their Pope in a way, and they don't look at him so much for any Catholic identification, but they listen to what he says, and they're impressed with the fact that he probably is, and it's sort of my opinion, he's the only person in the world that I can think of right now that speaks for the poor in such powerful language from a pulpit that people listen to. I mean, I can't think of another president or king or anyone in the world that has spoken so articulately and from his heart about taking care of the most poor and vulnerable. And I think that alone is what attracts many people who have that same compassion.
Darlene Weaver, what about the way the Pope, he warned against political polarization today, and he also spoke about unjust structures in society. How does this relate to the social doctrine of the Church?
Yes. Well, I very much agree with what Sister Rita just said, and your question is actually related to the theme of inclusiveness that she was just speaking to. So, attempts to relegate the Pope into American political binaries of conservative or progressive are really unfortunate. The Pope said on his flight from Cuba to the United States that he hasn't really ever said anything about social structures, economic justice, all these sorts of issues that isn't in line with the social teaching of the Catholic Church. And that's absolutely right. So the social teaching of the Catholic Church simply cannot be dissected or divided up along the political binaries that I just mentioned, conservative and progressive. So it's really wonderful to see the Pope speaking about the integrity and the coherence of that tradition, the importance of recognizing that vulnerability is not, as our political imagination sometimes like to believe, the result of personal vice, but is deeply tied up with structural inequalities. His call that we recognize and that we affirm that, and that we understand politics as a realm of human action which is oriented toward unity and toward inclusiveness, and particularly toward bettering the situation of the most vulnerable populations in our community.
We're talking about the Pope's address to Congress today, some of the issues that he has spoken out on, and the reactions from people all around the world and those who have had a chance to listen to what he's had to say or who are looking forward to seeing him, for example, in Philadelphia this weekend. Our guests are Sister Rita Yasted, Dorothy Saladiak, Distinguished Professor of English at La Roche College, and also Darlene Weaver, Director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University. We'd like to know what you thought of the Pope's speech today and his stance on the issues, whether you are a Catholic or not. Are you concerned at all about separation of church and state when you see the Pope addressing Congress, or are you one of those who feels that the members of Congress deserved a good old catechism lesson today? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. We'll take a break. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about the Pope's historic address to Congress. Pope Francis, the first Pope ever to address a joint session of Congress. He did so this morning. You might have heard it here on 90.5 WESA, and we're getting your reaction to the Pope's address. And we're talking with Sister Rita Yasted, the Dorothy Saladiak Distinguished Professor of English at La Roche College, and also Darlene Weaver, Director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University, with us by phone. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Christy on Twitter says, Francis's speech today illustrated how Catholics can't toe a particular party line because it embraces both sides of so many issues. What is your take on that, Darlene Weaver?
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the social teaching of the Catholic Church, you can see various principles that some of them read as talking points for what here in the United States we would think of as typically a Republican agenda, and some of them read as talking points for what we would typically think of as a Democratic agenda. It's a complex and very rich moral tradition, and there's internal coherence to it, but it doesn't map easily onto the political binaries that dominate the American imagination.
And Sister Rita, a Newsweek headline asked, is the Pope Catholic? Referring to reaction to the Pope taking stands on important issues. And certainly so far during his U.S. visit, Pope Francis has wasted no time wading into turbulent political waters. Has the Pope in some way radically reordered the priorities of the papacy, if not the church itself?
I don't think he's radically reordered the priorities. I go back to what I said originally. I think he really is calling us back to the basics. And the basics are that you have to, you know, love God, love one another. And that really has been the basis of this. You can't let anyone out of the goods of the world. I love the part where he spoke today about he never used the words income inequality, but he talked about those who don't have and the fact that we have to share all the goods of the world for the common good. There were so many things in the speech today in which I thought he was broad enough, and with the exception of, I thought the one thing that he was very pointed about was capital punishment. But other than that, in a sense, he sort of cloaked much of what he was saying almost in a metaphorical sense. You could sort of figure out one direction or another. But there's no question that he's Catholic. I mean, he's Catholic at the very base of what Catholicism has been.
Right. It was interesting, as you say, he was very direct on the issue of capital punishment, and
he wanted it abolished is the word he used.
Yes, he came right out and said that. It would have been interesting to hear him say that in front of the legislature in Pennsylvania, because,
well, he did it in front of legislators from Pennsylvania.
Right.
We'll see when they come back and have the argument with the governor.
Now, columnist E.J. Dion, who of course is also an NPR commentator, said that being out front on issues like climate change, immigration, social justice, and capitalism has, quote, out-liberaled liberals. has he in fact done this? And as someone, hopefully you don't mind me saying that you could be identified and probably have been
as
a liberal yourself?
Yes, you could say that. I don't think he's out-liberaled liberals. I think he, I have to say from my perspective, I think he's made liberals think about the sort of basis of what liberalism actually is. It has its roots in freedom for all, and in a sense, I think it has forced liberals and progressives, which the term that we probably prefer, to really not only stand for the things that you stand for, but to ask yourself why and upon what basis you really promote this. And I think that's important. It isn't a case of just this is what I think, but this is why I think it. And I think that's important for anyone.
And Darlene Weaver, you are, of course, also an associate professor of theology at Duquesne, and in addition to being director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University. And you know, it's hard to mention all of that all the time, but I wanted to work that in because today Francis warned against polarization and a, quote, simplistic, unquote, way of framing disputes between people as good versus evil. I would be very interested, Darlene, to hear your take on that.
Yeah, I'm trained as an ethicist, or in Catholic tradition, what's sometimes called in moral theology. So I really liked that particular line. You know, one of the central themes and undeniable emphasis of his address to Congress today was the importance of dialogue. He positioned himself as inviting or wanting to enter into dialogue with the entire population of the United States. He also mentioned some specific populations, the elderly and the young, and so on. And he spoke repeatedly about the dangers of polarization. He linked what it means to be a good political leader to a readiness to enter into dialogue and to initiate processes rather than simply possessing space. And so I think in a particular way, Francis was challenging those of us who like to take refuge in categories in which we define our identity or try to protect our interests or our issues over against those of others. He was talking both politically and morally about the dangers of those polarizing and reductionistic categories. And I think that resonates with the theme of inclusivity in his talk, but also the theme of mercy for the Jubilee year that will begin this December.
But how do you, so much of our foreign policy, our reasons for going to war, which the Pope may very well be taking issue with, but so much of what we do, how we legislate, for better or worse, is framed as good versus evil. Now, he is saying, you know, there needs to be a more nuanced approach, is what I would take from what he said today. But at the same time, how do you take that out of us? Isn't that a part of really how we identify ourselves as Americans? We're the good people. Number one, yeah, right. Your sister Rita's holding up a number one here. Yeah, but we're the best. We're the greatest. We're the supreme moral arbiter. And so this is what the Pope is asking here is not as easy as it may sound, right?
Right.
Right. No, I mean, it's extremely difficult to be honest about the shortcomings of your own community. And the Pope referred it several times up to, for instance, the breakdown of dialogue, to the mistreatment of indigenous persons here in the United States. You know, he, I think, is suggesting that we need to be really honest about the fact that we've made mistakes, or that there are, despite being the land of the free and the home of the brave, and he still referred to America as a land where, you know, where dreams are cherished and prized, we do not have an uncheckered past. And it's not as though our role as some sort of beacon or leader on a global scene isn't also full of examples of our own shortcomings, right? I mean, there are people here in our country who live in really deeply poorly underserved communities, who are subject to violence, whose constitutional rights are infringed upon, and so on.
And the Pope certainly was advocating for those people.
Exactly. So if we want to enter into the dialogue that he is urging us to enter into, one component of that dialogue needs to be honesty.
It certainly, when you talk about our checkered past, it ties in with another historic act that the Pope performed here on U.S. soil, and that was the first canonization. And I want to get into that, but I also want to get to a caller. We have Elizabeth from Mount Lebanon on the line. Elizabeth, welcome to the conversation. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. My comment was that I didn't like the comment of the lady that called ahead talking about he agreed with Republicans and Democrats and whatever. I think she's missing the point. I think that this Pope appears to me to be closer to the teachings of Jesus Christ and not so much interested in dogma. Excuse me, I'm a little nervous.
No,
that's all I had to say.
You're among friends, Elizabeth. All right, thank you for sharing that. Elizabeth's comments, interesting. Your take on them, Sister Rita.
Well, I think I kind of said that at the beginning. He does not he doesn't come across as being a teacher of, to use your thing about the catechism lesson. It isn't just answer, questions and answers. I think it's questions, and in a sense, he's asking us to look back at the gospel, to look at what Jesus said and find an answer in that. And the ability to do that is a lifelong process. I don't think that's easy. It is above political party. But I think, for people who don't know it, I was watching on television last night that there's a statue of a homeless person on a bench that someone has sculpted where you can see all but the only thing you can see of the body is the feet, and the feet have holes in them because it's supposed to be the feet of Christ. And this is right down in one of the most important streets in Washington, D.C., on one of the benches, very close to a homeless shelter where he's having lunch today. So he didn't stay and have lunch with all the people in Congress. He went off to a homeless center to have lunch with these people. I think that the thing about Francis that has to impress, whether you're Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, or any religion, is he really puts his money where his mouth is. Here is a man who has, from the very first day he was a pope, and he gets on the bus with everyone and goes back and pays his bill for the hotel room he was staying in, and then goes to an apartment instead of the papal palace. Everything he has done has been a reminder, this is how you should live. Don't even listen, you know, if you watch the speech today with the sound off, in a sense, watch what he does. And I think that's been the thing that... I mean, when he came in as Pope, a lot of people said, he's going to change everything. And I read a wonderful quote that I've remembered. Father Brian Hare, who's in Boston at Harvard, said, this Pope has not changed any words, but he's changed the music. And that's not a small thing. And I think that's really how I see him. I mean, for those of us who were progressive, who were saying at the beginning, oh, he's going to change this, he's going to change that, I don't think that in dogma he's not going to make big changes, but he has changed attitudes, and he's shown us by his life how one should live. It's not a case of saying, well, I just give a donation to the poor every month. He goes out and feeds them. He goes out and sits down and eats with them. He talks to them. These are the people that he identifies with. And I think that's the message of the gospel.
He has been criticized, however, this Pope has. Some advocates for victims of sexual abuse have posted statements online lamenting that Pope Francis did not even directly identify the crisis when he spoke to bishops and referred to the, quote, the courage with which you have faced difficult moments in the recent history of the church in this country. What about that, and why hasn't he done that?
I can't say he hasn't done that. I think that he's one person who is coming from a world that's very different from yours and mine. He's been in as a hierarch in the church for a long time, and now he's got the top position. I think he's very compassionate, but I think he comes out of a culture that he's trying to understand. I think that the whole culture of allowing this to go on, I won't say he didn't know it, but it wasn't one of those things that anyone talked about. It was one of those things that was first foremost in the news. And I think when it came out, the bishops and he are trying to figure out what do you do with it. And it is horrible. There is no way to forgive it at one level. On the other hand, I don't want to say that negates everything else that he's said and done. And I think if any of those victims, and he has sat down with victims at different parts of his papacy, that he didn't do it here, I can't condemn him for it, to be quite honest with you. He's not perfect. Dorothy Day wasn't perfect. Thomas Merton wasn't perfect. Martin Luther King wasn't perfect. And Abraham Lincoln wasn't perfect. And they were the four people that he framed his entire talk around. And I think that said something.
I would be interested to hear, before we go to break, and Darlene, if you would like to weigh in on that as well.
Well, I mean, again, I think it's important to underscore that he has sat down with victims before, and he also said that the sex abuse scandal will never be repeated. You know, he's on record as having really an unambiguous commitment to finding ways to not repeat the past. But it's also understandable. I mean, he's speaking to a lot of constituencies and about a very broad range of topics. And he said so many things.
Well, let me jump in, Darlene, because please. Aside from meeting with victims, what specifically has the Pope said or done that leads you to believe that he is taking some concrete steps to prevent abuse, sexual abuse, like what has happened, from ever happening again?
Well, he's reorganizing the Roman Curia. And again, just in his, he gave a speech Wednesday when he was speaking to the American bishops, and he said that the Catholic Church child abuse, child sex abuse scandal will never be repeated. So he did speak to that scandal and I think reaffirm his commitment to making the sorts of changes that are needed in order to avoid having that happen again. But I think that it
does he need to do something more drastic going forward? Does the Vatican need to consider or rethink the idea of priests allowing priests to marry?
Oh gosh, you know, I think that that argument rests on a real misunderstanding of the charism of celibate life, and you know,
but there are people. But you know why I'm asking that, because there are people who wonder about that.
Sure, right. There are people who wonder about that. But again, that rests on a misunderstanding of the nature of celibate life and the particular gift of that charism. I mean, there are larger questions that can be asked in particular regions about the conditions in which clergy need to live out their lives. I think declining vocations to clerical life has made, particularly in for diocesan priests, and less so for those who are members of religious orders. But it's led, the decline in priestly vocations has led to more isolated living situations and things like that. There are, of course, questions that bishops need to continue to ask about the formation and support for the priests and their dioceses. But it would be, I think, a serious mistake to somehow suggest that Pope Francis has not been attuned to these sorts of issues. I think his own attempts to reform the Roman Curia exemplify a readiness to bring structural change to bear where the need for that is evident.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we are talking with Sister Rita Yasted, Dorothy Saladiak, Distinguished Professor of English at La Roche College, and Darlene Weaver, whom you just heard, Director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University. We'll continue the conversation. We do need to work in one more break before the top of the hour. We'll try to get your calls in at 412-246-2002. Also, your emails and tweets. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about Pope Francis's historic address to Congress, heard earlier today on 90.5 WESA. And we are weighing in, getting some reaction to that, joined by certainly a couple of experts in studio with us, Sister Rita Yasted, Dorothy Saladiak, Distinguished Professor of English at La Roche College, and also Darlene Weaver, Director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University, who is also an associate professor of theology at Duquesne. We have a tweet from an email from Beatriz, who says, "Let's not forget that Francis spoke against arms trade, such a fundamental issue, the reason for all the wars that are going on. No one but him had the courage to talk about that in Congress." That's a email from Beatriz.
Yeah, hear, hear. And that was what struck me about putting Thomas Merton in. Thomas Merton is one of the great advocates for international peace. He was a pacifist. He was almost crucified for it within his church and the country. I agree. I was hoping somebody would actually ask that, because that is one of the things that sort of slipped by that he brought in at the end about selling arms as a great business. And she's right. It was a big issue.
Let's take a call from Janet in the South Hills. Janet, you wanted to comment on the sex abuse issue.
Yes, I just wanted to make an observation from what I've read and what I have seen. The Pope didn't actually address sexual abuse or pedophilia in the church. He referred to the scandals very obliquely and said that they would never be repeated.
Right. He's been criticized for not directly identifying the crisis when he spoke to bishops, at least.
Right.
So
and
your point is
whether it's due to his being a man and finding that offensive, that he didn't even want to discuss it, I don't know. But the second thing is that, of course, it'll be repeated. Pedophilia has been present throughout history, and it even will be covered up again because friends will help friends, and that's exactly what has occurred in the church. Priests have
Let me jump in, Janet, because you're making a good point, and Janet is articulating the skepticism that a lot of people have. Even when Pope Francis says it'll never happen again, I'm sure there are plenty of people saying, really? We certainly hope it doesn't, but, you know, it's one thing to say that it won't happen or to promise that it won't happen, and another maybe to prevent it from happening. So, Janet, we appreciate your call. I don't know if
Paul VI stood in front of the UN and said, no more war, never, never, and that was a long time ago. We've had quite a few wars since then. It's easy to say that.
Let's get into the one last thing before we wrap up. We've only have a couple of minutes left, but Pope Francis performed the first canonization on U.S. soil yesterday, declaring 18th century Franciscan missionary Junipero Serra to be a saint. Several Native American groups have protested the canonization and accused him of creating a system where converted Indians were required to live on missions and were whipped for misbehaving or trying to flee. Was the Pope a little tone deaf on this issue? Did he take these concerns into consideration? What happened here?
I don't think he was tone deaf. I know the argument, and I've read quite a bit about it. And I think the difficulty is historically, in fact, he alluded to that in a sense in his talk today about kind of looking back on history and understanding that to judge what happened in the 18th century by 21st century standards is not completely fair. There's a mixed story on Junipero Serra. For the Spanish, they've been asking for this for a long time. California has one of two statues in Washington to him. It was a great success for the Spanish. It was not a great success for the Native Americans. And it's almost that simple, but I don't mean to be simplistic. I think it was complicated. When we evangelize a people, whether that was the Roman Church or other churches, other religions, that has often come at a high price to the people that were evangelized. That was true of the African Americans. It was true of the Native Americans. It's been true of people in other parts of the world. And I think that Junipero Serra was part of that. I think that what he was trying to show is the importance of bringing the gospel. Unfortunately, it wasn't manifested in the behavior of many of the Spaniards when they brought Catholicism, and it was a political thing. But I think that in a sense, he has been revered by many, many people. He was not a perfect saint. But I think that he did, at his time, or even in the eyes of this pope, something important. He brought the gospel to a people.
Darlene Weaver, Bishop Zubik's response to all this was, quote, saints are sinners as well, end quote. Really?
Well, yes. I mean, none of us are perfect. And this is true of any human institution as well. I mean, the church is full of sinners and hypocrites, and that's why Jesus came.
And it's certainly, I think, something that maybe inspires us to rethink our thoughts. And when you talk about dogma, to say that, you know, you don't have to be perfect to be a saint is an interesting thing.
Well, it underscores what Pope Francis...
I'm sorry, Darlene, we've got about, just so you know, we've got about 20 seconds here, but go ahead.
Sure, just that it underscores what he said about inclusivity and his criticism of polarizing discourse, where we're ready to lump folks into categories of right and wrong or good and evil.
Well, it's been an interesting conversation. I hope that you've enjoyed it as much as I have. Sister Rita Yasted, Dorothy Saladiak, Distinguished Professor of English at La Roche College, thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And also Darlene Weaver, Director of the Center for Catholic Intellectual Tradition at Duquesne University and a Associate Professor of Theology at Duquesne. Thank you so much, Darlene Weaver.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. Tomorrow on the show, Frampton Comes Alive, a live interview with rock star Peter Frampton. He's coming to Pittsburgh, but not before he comes onto Essential Pittsburgh. That's tomorrow. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.